time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
And our thanks to Uncle Barry. Your Outsiders this morning, Guy Rundle. He's a writer on transcontinental politics for Crikey, among other publications. Roger Franklin, online editor for Quadrant. And Jane Gilmore, editor of King's Tribune. Welcome to you all.
Good morning.
Oh, very nicely done. Splendid chorus. I think we should do it again. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Morning,
John.
Morning, Mr. Green.
I'm enjoying that. Well, the story this morning in local politics, the wedding singers. They're at it again, the government. Allegations of, I don't know how we should phrase this exactly, but expenses have been claimed for attendance at certain nuptials, notably a Bollywood wedding at which some politicians were flown across by Gina Rinehart and then came back of their own accord, claiming some of those expenses against the public purse. Jane, tisk tisk, I say.
And yes, it's all quite shocking, isn't it? I think we're all quite surprised about this, politicians claiming these things. But also I think part of the problem is the media has had their chew toy taken away, and now they're bored and twitchy and looking for something to do. And so they're going around finding these things because, of course, they're there to be found on either side of politics.
And yet, I mean, new ministers of the Crown, like Barnaby Joyce, should know better than to claim however many $1,000 it was to fly back from Malaysia. I mean, Guy Rundle, AirAsia can get you
$200, but you bring your own sandwiches. So Barnaby and wife spent close to 6,000 flying from Kuala Lumpur, which is, I mean, it's almost on the Melbourne tram network, Kuala Lumpur. It's so close. So you know, that really is, I mean, it's interesting. You do wonder whether there is going to be parallels with the British expenses scandals and the way that was like a thread that someone tugged at with a few expenses.
Quickly unraveled.
And when you pulled it, you then found out that people had been, what you'd had was expenses inflation. People had started putting stuff on and a little more on over the years. Nobody had real guidelines. And then suddenly people were, you know, charging for their moats to be cleaned or for an island for their ducks on their country estate.
I do remember,
which are my
that
two favourites,
yes.
from those days. And so we will see.
But Roger Franklin, Tony Abbott caught up in all this morning as well with the wedding. This is some time ago of Sophie Mirabella, then Panopoulos. It was a wedding with full military honours, as would seem fitting. But Tony Abbott attended and
charged, what, $1,200?
Which he subsequently repaid.
Which he did.
Is that enough? I mean, just as long as you give it back, does that make it
allowing
okay?
That all the details as reported this morning in the Fairfax papers, which is often a dubious proposition, are correct, then it's time to go through the expenses of parliamentarians like a dose of salts. They're there to serve the people.
Well, this is, I mean, Guy's example. I mean, when that happened in the UK, it became... And this was one of the first things where the Guardian got the documents and threw that over to the good people to plough through.
Well, it's very interesting because it was one of the first FOI requests. Like, Freedom of Information came in late to Britain, and an American journalist named Heather Brooke, who was used to doing FOIs in the United States, she said she rang up on like the third day that FOIs were being done, and she found out that nobody had yet put in an FOI request or anything. So she suddenly realised she had the field pretty much to herself. And so I think she put in some massive FOIs.
Do you mean journalists lacking in initiative?
British journalists lacking in initiative, coming down,
that possible,
coming down from Cambridge. And
now they've hacked the expense accounts of every year.
So it will be interesting to see. I mean, the interesting thing about this wedding stuff is I always thought when we were on the trail during this election, I always thought Tony Abbott looked like a crooner at a mafia wedding. That's what he always looked like. He always looked like he was about to stand up and sing That's Amore.
You must have attended some different matches.
Oh, no, he just looked like Frank Sinatra with the horse's head in the bed.
Who's the guy?
I speak as somebody who was married to an Italian from Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn.
to take this seriously for a moment, Jane, I mean, does this recall the teething problems of the first Howard term, where there were some issues around sort of ministerial conduct and probity, which, as a result of which, people came unstuck? I mean, the sort of things that we've seen around expenses so far,
well, I think it
would have been enough back in the day to have people lose their job.
I think it's whether it's how deep does it go? Because at the moment we're only scratching the surface, and if it's just a few little bits and pieces where people genuinely have forgotten, or I'm assuming that Tony Abbott doesn't do his own expenses, so somebody in his office has got mixed up. If there's a few bits and pieces like that, then no, it's probably not a big deal. If somebody's building islands for their ducks and we just don't know about it yet, then that's a problem. And I think somebody somewhere is probably going to, might even be our good guy Rundle himself, might make the effort to go and dig into this.
It's investigative?
It requires very little in the way of excavation because it's all on the public record.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just a matter of doing it. And
sitting down and picking through it. Yeah.
And there are probably enough people out there who are a little bit upset about Tony Abbott being the Prime Minister that they might find some time to do this.
Suitably inspired. Mm. Now,
I think we have tighter rules on things like accommodation, that sort of thing. I mean, in the UK, people were living 20 miles from London and running two different houses on expenses because it was too onerous in Britain to go 20 miles home late at night. So that was it was an extraordinary.
We also lack moats in most cases.
Yes, so most cases.
It's not, we could build some.
It's not, I'd hasten to add, just simply a thing that goes on in the federal sphere. If you want to look at parliamentarians' trips, you can have a field day looking at what Victorian parliamentarians get up to on their study trips.
Well, the state level is of course, very fertile. This is Outsiders on Sunday Extra. Guy Rundle, Roger Franklin and Jane Gilmore this morning. And one of the big things of the past week was this.
We've got to be able to say, you know, strongly to women and girls, you've got a right to an environment that treats you with respect, treats you as an equal, and raising your voice about that isn't starting a war, it isn't playing the victim, it's just asking for what simply is right. Equality.
Julia Gillard and those two extremely popular and celebratory encounters with Anne Summers, which what they might have lacked in sort of interrogative vigour made up for in love, I think. Were you surprised at all, Guy Rundle, by the enthusiasm of the reception?
No, I could feel the estrogen coming off the TV screen. It was like, I didn't have a problem with sort of people doing, you know, a grand tour of their fan base and people coming out for that sort of thing. But once again, it didn't really, you know, it's an event that's just after the great, you know, the great sacking and the great bloodletting and that sort of thing. So you weren't going to get a more honest assessment of
the
thing.
And I think sneering at the audience for dripping estrogen when, for particularly women in Australia, to have a woman in that position was a huge move, whatever we may have thought of some of the things that she did.
Absolutely, yes.
That sneering at the response is perhaps a little unnecessary.
No, as I said, it's a, you know, you have a right to have these sort of celebratory events with a sort of fan base, a political base, that sort of thing.
And
that's
I think
fine.
The point's been made several times that we can say we were all really pleased to have a female Prime Minister while still being able to criticise many of the moves that she made.
And still being able to make a little joke about it.
As the resident.
Yes, well, I'm a feminist. I have no sense of
humour. I'm curious to know why possession of a uterus entitles you to respect as a Prime Minister.
I think that's the deeper thing here. I mean, I don't think anybody pretends that she wasn't
incompetent.
In many ways troubled by competence.
Yes.
I was at the Melbourne interview and I've obviously read a number of the other things she said and I found it quite a weird mix of being incredibly politically astute and naive to the point of stupidity about some of the pragmatic realities of politics.
This is what characterised those 3 years, though, those extraordinary contradictions.
And I also found that in the interview because it was almost hagiography having that interview with Anne Summers, but one of the people, I was at the Melbourne when one of the people asked her about her relationship with the media. And it was a really revealing response because she said that she had never developed any relationships with the press gallery as perhaps some others in the Labor Party may have. And that at the time she didn't think that was a problem because she didn't think she needed it, which is politically stupid.
Mm.
But she was concentrating on other things. But then she said that the reason she was doing this series of interviews with Anne Summers was because she wanted to encourage new media. And I thought, Anne Summers has done many amazing things, but she's not.
Media. She's something of a player at the moment.
Anna's pioneering a PDF for
yes,
monthly.
I wonder though, as well in this, I mean, and Gillard was always rather uncomfortable in her, especially early in her prime ministership, of claiming I'm the first female Prime Minister
yes,
is a great
virtue.
Yes, and the
thing that I really noticed was that Anne Summers was asking all these questions padded with misogyny, 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 responses were not, like she was talking away from that.
Was Gillard being conscripted to another agenda,
yes,
do you think?
I think she was, because in the answers that she was giving, and particularly the answers from the audience was where you really saw the difference, was that with the questions that Anne Summers was asking, Julia Gillard was answering in a much wider context than the questions themselves.
Her answer to the gay marriage thing, I thought, was rather good.
That she poses. Did you? I thought it was terrible.
She opposes the institution of marriage. I come from a different point of view than you do, but I'm quite happy to see her make a fool of herself.
The interesting thing about it, it seems to me, as Jane's saying about a wider agenda trying to be narrowed into a simpler tale of misogyny and that sort of thing, is that the great reality of these the last years of politics is that the Gillard government did put in a policy agenda which Tony Abbott, as the price of becoming Prime Minister, has largely signed on to in terms of the NDIS, in terms of much of Gonski, in terms of a version of the NBN, in terms of no more return to work choices. And in doing so, in doing that, in making leaving nothing to chance in becoming Prime Minister, Tony Abbott has really become, if you like, you know, Malcolm Fraser in relationship to Gillard's Whitlam. He has conceded that ground, and if the Liberals now try and reverse on that, they'll be fighting on Labour terrain.
Exaggerated and by the sort of modern centrism of the politics, too.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe not, but things like NDIS and Gonski are solid social democratic policies, and if the Coalition had been more confident about their chances of success, I think they would have advanced a far more laissez-faire policy set, which would have given them more legitimacy and elbow room over the next 3 years. And they didn't, and that's a tribute to Gillard.
Guy Rundle, Roger Franklin and Jane Gilmore are your outsiders this morning, coming up to 9:55. Just quickly, Roger, the shutdown in the US, we're maybe 12 or 13 days away from the US defaulting on its government bonds.
Do you think the market's going to take that seriously?
I think they will if it defaults.
No, they'll make an adjustment and everything will get bumped over. Everyone knows the United States isn't going to default on its bonds.
Do the Tea Party Republicans know that, guys?
Well, the thing about the debt ceiling is that actually Barack Obama, the president, can abolish it override it, as far as I understand, by regulation. So
presidential fiat.
Yes, it is this. It is a game of extraordinary political theatre. I mean, it's the faction of the Republicans that are now called the Taliban by other Republicans. This is not even just the Tea Party or just the Conservatives. This is a faction within a faction, pushing the Republicans to do things they don't want to do. And the target is the centre-right Republicans like John Boehner, who's the speakership. They want to destroy Boehner.
He's in a very uncomfortable position.
Well, he's gone. I mean, he's filleted. So, and that's what they want. They want to take over the speakership, and that completes their takeover of the party.
The Taliban faction of the Republican Party would refer to the people to whom you just mentioned, of course, as rhinos, Republicans in name only.
Well, but no, not even. People like
We're
Boehner.
We're starting to sound like Aaron Sorkin.
No, the rhinos are almost gone, you know, the Peter Kings and that sort of thing. There's barely 30 rhinos left. There's, 220-odd House of Reps members. What we're talking about is, you know, the 100 or so.
We're going to have to walk away.
People.
I'm sorry. The dog's in the Institute, and it's almost 9:55. Guy Rundle, Jane Gilmore, and Roger Franklin have been your outsiders this morning.